Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 179 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is July 25th, 2011. We've got a really busy show for you this week on the podcast. A ton of questions. If you have questions for us, we love to hear them. Podcast at uscfootball.com is our email address, or call us 206-888-6755. We have a few voicemail calls this week we got to get to as well. Lots of questions. Talk about some Ohio State stuff, reaction from that. Mark Tyler, Pac-12 Media Day, recruiting. We got all that coming on. And we're joined by Coach Harvey Hyde in the first segment, as always. Coach, how you doing?
Ryan, I'm doing great, buddy. Everything's ready to go. We've got Media Day tomorrow over in Los Angeles at the Fox Studios, so I'm getting ready for that, and I'm looking forward to talking to all my friends there and also listening to the coaches from the new Pac-12. So we've got two other additional teams to listen to tomorrow, so it'll be a bit longer.
It will be. I didn't even think about that. Two more teams to listen to for Pac-12 Media Day. We'll be down there covering it for USCFootball.com. We'll get some reaction from Coach Harvey Hyde. We're going to get who he thinks where people are going to finish in the Pac-12. And I want to thank our sponsor before we jump into everything, Southern California Tickets. SCTickets.com is the website, or call them 1-800-888-7287 if you need tickets for anything. Any kind of sporting event, if you want to go to a concert, check out the theater, anything like that in Los Angeles or anywhere across the country, go to sctickets.com, and they'll help you out. And Coach, Pac-12 Media Day, you don't need a ticket for that. You have to be a member of the media. What are you expecting to see there? Where are your picks for all of that?
Well, I expect to see everyone a little bit excited and wanting to see just what people's thoughts are. And, of course, hear the new coaches talk about they're now being a pack of the Pac-12. I'm looking forward to listening to Larry Scott. He normally opens the media day with a brief summary of what's been going on during the year in the football season. And he'll probably talk a little bit about the television contracts and the playoff game now for the first time, December the 4th. He'll be talking about that, I think, a little bit. So I'm just looking forward to seeing if they address the issues and they talk about some of the things that maybe I've always said that they should talk about the rule changes. I know tonight they have an officials meeting, and Tony Corrente now is the new referee coordinator for the Pac-12. He's been an NFL official for years. I know Tony for a long time when he worked his way up to the old PCAA all the way on up till worked two or three Super Bowls, and now he's still working the NFL and also going to be the official coordinator for the referees. So they're meeting tonight with the coaches on some of the rule changes for this coming year, and I think that I would like to see them take a little bit of time and explain that to the media so the media understand exactly what the rule changes are. I've always said this every year, that there's a lot of things they keep in the dark to the media, as far as, and to myself, not that I don't talk to Tony and get the interpretations of these rule changes, but I think it should be out there where people can talk about them and fans understand them before we get started. In the championship game, I'd like to ask Larry Scott the question of why, and I still don't feel this is fair, why the championship game is played at the home team of the team with the best record in the Pac-10, or Pac-12. I don't believe that's fair. I don't feel that's a neutral field. I don't fair that's right. I think it should. That's correct. I think it should be at a neutral site where both teams have the same opportunity to win, but they're so concerned they won't sell the game out that they're having it at the home field, so at least they can guarantee a sellout. So, but I don't think that's right as far as having the best team represent their conference in the Rose Bowl or wherever they're going by having the team with the best record host that game. I'd like to ask those type of questions, and I don't know if they'll allow me to do that, but if I have a chance, you know my hand will go up.
Yes. Well, we'll be curious to see what happens down there, Coach, and I think there's a lot of questions, and USC fans and the media are going to be grilling Larry Scott a little bit. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. How cool. It's not going to be at the Rose Bowl like last year, but we'll be at the Fox studio a lot. And you'll actually be able to watch it. We're going to put the live stream on USCFootball.com. So if you want to hear what happens Tuesday morning, go to USCFootball.com. We'll have the live stream from Pac-12 Media Day. You can hear what all the coaches are up to and stuff. So we'll put that up live on our website. Check that
out. You're going to do that, huh?
We'll do that, yeah. So it should
be cool. I think that's absolutely fantastic. Then everyone can be listening and hearing the same things we're hearing when we're there.
Yeah, so you can check out what all the coaches have to say. Every coach will have a different player. I think there's 11 offensive players, and Oregon State's bringing a defensive player. So a lot of quarterbacks be out there. You'll see guys like Andrew Luck and Matt Barkley and all that. So should be interesting. Well, we got a bunch of questions, Coach, so maybe we should jump into that. Last week we got to talk about the Mark Tyler situation. It was funny. We recorded the show maybe a couple of hours before USC came out with the penalties for Mark Tyler, that he'll be suspended from all team activities and suspended for at least the first game of the season. There was a statement by Mark Tyler, by Pat Hayden. There was a statement by Lane Kiffin. So that all kind of broke down. We were talking about it early, Coach, and then so then we did have a couple questions on that. And the first one's a voicemail question. Here's that one.
Yeah, hi, Abraham. I just wanted some feedback. I had a thought on Mark Tyler. You know, first of all, he's not a loser, or else he, you know, he wouldn't be where he's at. I think that he's the difference between him and, say, like a T.J. McDonald or a Robert Woods is that they have passion for football, where Mark Tyler, you know, he lacks passion. Otherwise, you know, he'd be in greatest shape possible. He's just somebody who's very talented, who maybe liked being around the guys, kind of like Shaquille O'Neal. He was just so talented, but, you know, him and Kobe didn't get along because Kobe had passion, his work ethic, Shaq. He just couldn't reach that level, but that didn't make him a loser. It just means that he doesn't have as much passion for the game. Simply put, you just don't do what he does if you do have the passion. And it's the recruiter's job to find the people with the best talent and along with the most passion. And I'm sure they do their best job in doing that. Just wanted your feedback on that. And secondly, I also wanted to mention that, you know, for the entire Trojan Nation, how about, like, becoming the people's champ this year, just like Muhammad Ali did back when he couldn't have the title. He became the people's champ, and I think the USC Nation is strong enough to become the people's champ this year, and I think we can. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in. We appreciate your questions, and I'll try to answer your questions. First of all, let me definitely say I don't think Mark Tyler is a loser. I think that he's a kid that needs some direction as far as understanding the commitment it takes to be a champion. And to be a champion today, there's so little difference between the edge of winning and losing and the competitiveness, not only on your team, but against other teams, that you have to have a complete dedication to what you're doing. And he's lost focus, I think, a little bit into spending too much time in other areas, that he should be dedicating that time to, first of all, becoming what he wants to be as far as an All-American. He should be an All-American. There's no reason why he isn't the All-American that he was predicted to be. And also be committed as far as doing what's necessary to be a champion, to be a leader. He's a senior. He's in an opportunity and a position to dominate in the Pac-12 and establish what he hasn't been able to establish in the past. And he just hasn't demonstrated that. From the spring, I mentioned it in the spring, and I'm mentioning it again now, that in the spring he didn't report in shape, he got hurt, he didn't have a chance to participate in spring practice. That should have been a lesson to him there, or a wake-up call. We talked about it there. Maybe he ought to listen to the podcast. And if people don't tell him those things, or then obviously then he's not listening, but they know they are. They know, I know that anyone who's around the game, his coaches, his strength coaches, his father, who is a great player, and Wendell Tyler and so on, understand the dedicated effort it takes to maintain your body and maintain your focus to be able to be a champion and a leader. And he hadn't been able to demonstrate that. When you're a senior and you miss spring practice because you get hurt or you're out of shape, that's not demonstrating what you're supposed to be about. And also you lose the respect of your teammates and also the people that watch you and the people that evaluate you as far as the NFL scouts and so on. So I think he's lost a lot of that, and he's been distracted and gotten in trouble off the field. And those things, you've got to remember that when you're at that level of competition, you are a celebrity to people and to the media, and they always watch everything you do. You might not think anyone knows who you are, where you are, but all people know who you are. You might not know them, but they know you. And you've got to learn to be able to put your place at the right time and have some common sense. And he hasn't really demonstrated that, to be messing around in certain places and acting that way. If you are in those type of situations, you've got to act as a gentleman. And when you leave that place, people say, isn't he a great kid? I noticed he didn't even drink or whatever. So, you know, he's had those issues and it's going to hurt him. And I'm sorry that happened, but he put himself in that position and he has no one to blame but himself. And as his father mentioned, he thinks the penalty is fair and deserving. And so now everyone's going to have to watch and see how he comes back. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to not be able to be on the practice field, to not be able to participate. You can't look back as a coach and let someone just come back and get reps and get back in there, especially when you've had a fall camp and you've also played a game. You just can't do that. And you can't do that to your teammates. And you can't do that to the players who have done everything that's right. So I'd be very surprised if he plays. Maybe he'll play towards the end of the year. And it's going to be a very difficult, difficult thing for this young man. I really think it is. So that's my feeling on that, and I can't even remember the second half.
Oh, he was talking about the People's Champ, USC trying to go out and go undefeated and be the People's Champ.
Right. Well, they should be, and I've talked about that before, too. I really believe that every Saturday or Thursday or Friday, because the Trojans play on all of those days, sometime during the year, that is their bowl game. I even mentioned that I would even give them a ring for every game, some type of token within the NCAA rules and guidelines where, hey, this is our opening game bowl, or this is the Golden Gopher Bowl, or this is the Sun Devil Bowl, or this is the Wildcat Bowl, or the Duck Bowl, or whatever. And I would prepare for it in exactly that manner. And I would go out, as many publications have the Trojans the favorite as far as in the South Division, go out and play for that. And when we didn't have the opportunity to play, when I say we, USC, to play in the championship game, I would sit back and say we should have been there, and everybody knows we should be the team in that game, and everybody knows that we're the best team in the Pac-12. And that's exactly the way I'd approach this season if I was Lane Kiffin, and I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll get their team ready. I had a chance to talk to a couple of their players this summer, and this is exactly what I passed on to them. Don't worry about it. Some of you, it's your senior year. Go out and leave a legend. This team will be remembered if you win the Pac-12, the first year there is a Pac-12, and you are denied the opportunity to move on. And when I listen and I hear these reports so far about the NCAA sees that there's no more additional violations with the Ohio State program and they're satisfied, that would even motivate me more to give a pep talk. Dan, I'll tell you what, I could really get those guys fired up.
I'm sure you could, Coach. And we're going to talk a lot about that with Dan Weber in the next segment. One more question for Mark Tyler from Steve. He was wondering why Coach Kiffin and Pat Hayden decided to keep Mark on the team. It's a third strike, so to speak. And he kind of expected Mark to be kicked off the team. There's three reasons he wanted to know maybe that's why he wasn't. First, because Tyler was a senior, he'd be eligible to transfer penalty-free and could go to maybe UCLA or another Pac-12 school. The second was there's a drop-off in talent and experience after Mark Tyler, and they need him to win. I don't really think that's the case, or the first one. And three, says they really do care about him as a human being and making his return to the team conditional on completing some sort of substance abuse recovery program and or testing. Thanks, you guys are the best. Keep up the great work.
Well, first of all, he can't transfer to any school in the Pac-12. He could transfer to any school in the country, but not in the Pac-12 itself. That's one of the stipulations. They can leave, and he can go to another university. But, he wouldn't be able to go to the Pac-12. So do they worry about that? I don't think so. I think if the young man wanted to do that, he'd be running away from what he should be facing, and I think he would be criticized for that. Number two, I sincerely believe that Lane Kiffin and Pat Hayden really do care about this kid. You care about all your kids. You want to give all your kids an opportunity to be successful academically and athletically. And I don't know if he's on course towards graduation, but I'm sure he is. So it wouldn't do him really a lot of good to transfer and maybe lose the opportunity of graduating from USC with a USC degree. That's the number one thing you go to school for. And he's probably close to getting his degree. So why would you pass that up? As far as him facing the penalties that he has, that's something he has to face. He knows he deserves it. He's lucky he wasn't kicked off the team. And I think that he now has to be the type of, I think a lot of people will be watching it, including ourselves, the fans, the NFL scouts, and so on, exactly how he accepts this punishment. And I think staying right at USC is the correct thing for him to do. If he has to come back and be part of the scout team, that's what he'll have to do. He'll have to do what's ever necessary to put himself in a position possibly to play. Now, you really don't know what the situation will be at USC at the time that he comes back. Maybe there'll be some injuries with the offensive backs. Maybe there'll be some opportunities if he's working hard and understanding and understands the playbook and so on. Maybe he'll be put in on special goal line situations or something, and people might be able to accept that. So, you know, you just can't, say he's through at USC. I would say he has a difficult time in coming back and playing a lot, but I think part of his punishment is to overcome the punishment and prove to the people at USC and prove to the people in the NFL, but he definitely should be an NFL football player, that he can take the punishment. He is tough. He can reorganize his lifestyles. Now, during this period of time, he'll have some time off where he'll have more time where he should spend in studying and conditioning, not other play. So I think this is something that's going to be all evaluated, and who knows? He might come back and play a lot, but I think it'll be difficult for him.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll see. I mean, the big thing for me is missing fall camp. If he misses the whole thing, or maybe they let him come back for the second half of fall camp, anything along those lines. Being that far behind the curve, even though you're a senior, Coach, I mean, I don't know if you had a player that would miss all of fall camp and they could come back in the second game. How hard for that? I mean, how hard is that on a player to try and come back and work its way back in the rotation?
No, it's really hard. It's not fair to the team. If you're out there and you're practicing your team all during fall camp and they've been working out and going through all of that, fall camp isn't fun. Fall camp's brutal on your body and your morale and everything else. So it wouldn't be fair. But I think him being a senior, if everybody knows that he's out there working hard, and they would accept it easier for him to come back and maybe sparingly play in certain roles to help the team win. And everybody wants to win. And if someone could come into a game situation where they know he's the best at that situation and what he does there, teams will accept that. Teams will accept that. But again, he's got to prove that he can accomplish what his punishments have been and get to that position. Otherwise, he'll never have that opportunity.
All right. Well, we got one last question, Coach. It's from our friend Guy. It's about the strength and conditioning program.
This is Guy. I want to say that the great Chris Carlisle once said, and I quote, "Don't look around you for anything else, anything less than perfection. You won't find it. You know what I demand of you. That is why no one else can stay with us through four quarters." That was his creed. Aaron Alsmus used to work for him. Has Alsmus done everything within his power to return the team to sustained winning shape? Thank you very much. Fight on.
Well, Guy, thank you for your question again. Has he? I hope so. Because you have to be in great shape to be able to play at the pace of what offenses are running, the rate of the number of plays they run in games now, and so on. I think your whole off-season program has to be geared around that. For a head coach or a strength coach not to adapt to what you have to condition yourself for is not getting the job done. I believe that today the game is really speeded up. There's a lot more substitution going on, whether you have a wave of players playing because of the speed of the game. And there's a lot more talented players on the field than ever before. So you have to be able to play full speed every single down. So I would hope that the conditioning is being done properly. There are always different methods of conditioning. Carlisle's method is not maybe the same as this gentleman's methods. I knew Carlisle, Chris, pretty well. I've had him on my show many times, and I know the type of conditioning that he did. He did not believe in big, bulk, strenuous, heavy lifting, power cleans, and all of that stuff. He believed in everything in the weight program to be relative to the game of football. Whatever you do in the weight room, somewhere on the football field, you utilize that skill. Now, the new strength coach, I have not really had the opportunity of meeting him. I have not watched what they do in the weight room. I know it's very important that he does condition the team to a point that they can play at the same pace that everybody expects them to play at. And if a team isn't conditioned and if a team can't play in the fourth quarter or play against the pace of your opponent, then something's wrong and something has to be looked at. Because when you get the greatest athletes in America, which USC has, and I keep saying that because I sincerely believe that, that they should be conditioned to play at a pace that they should be pushing themselves to the limit. Unless they are at that point of conditioning, you're not doing anybody a favor. You're not doing the athlete a favor. You're not doing the team a favor by being what you call easy or not pushing them too hard, but they might complain or whatever. It's your job to have that team ready to play against any type of an opponent, any type of offense, and if it goes the full distance of the game, to playing the last play of the game to win.
Hey, Coach, I agree, and I'll share some thoughts. Guy, it was a great question, and Aaron Osmus is the new strength and conditioning coach. He did work at USC before. He was over at Tennessee. I don't think you can put a lot of blame on him last year for the condition that players were in the fourth quarter. It mostly was an issue of depth where, you know, we've talked to Ed Orgeron, we've talked to different line coaches. They're like, yeah, we didn't have any kind of rotation. They didn't feel comfortable. You know, you play four or five guys the whole game on defensive line. They're, you know, basically only two tackles in the middle. It's tough. So I think this year it'll help just by having more of a rotation. But Coach is right. There's different philosophies and there's different ways to skin a cat. And Aaron Osmus and Chris Carlisle definitely have different philosophies on that. Osmus definitely has more of a, you know, he does like guys to get a little bit bulkier, a little more strength. He'll do more the power cleans and things like that, where Chris Carlisle, that wasn't really his philosophy. So things are a little bit different. I mean, I'm not saying one's better than the other. We got to talk to Chris Carlisle quite a bit when he was around. He was around for quite a while, and we had Aaron Osmus on our Ustream show over the spring and got to share some thoughts with him. So if you want to check that out, you can hear some of his philosophy. We had him on the show, and he talked for about a half an hour on what he thinks of, you know, how you should do things and his methods and stuff like that. I mean, there's different – I've talked to different players, and some guys – I mean, it just depends on which way you like. I know there's some guys that went to the NFL from Carlisle's program and really had to bulk up more. I think Kyle Moore was one of the guys. I talked to him, and he was a lot bigger when he went to Tampa Bay, and they had a different program. So he was leaner and meaner, I guess, when he was at USC, and in the NFL, they wanted him to be a little bit bulkier. So it just depends. You're gonna if you go to, you know, 10 different strength coaches, you're probably gonna get, you know, some different philosophies. Probably a lot of the same core values, but it is a little bit different. So we'll see. I mean, this year when they have more depth and a little bit more of a rotation, if guys are still running out of gas in the fourth quarter, then that could be something that, you know, the media is going to ask Aaron Osmus about. But as of now, I think last year a lot of the issues there were about depth as opposed to the condition players were in.
Well, I tell you, the media doesn't need to ask him. As head football coach, I'd ask him.
Yeah, I think Lane Kiffin would.
I don't think I'd wait for the media.
No. Well, just for our sake.
I might meet him in the middle of the field.
But yeah, I like Aaron Osmus a lot. He's a good guy, and
I don't even know him, and I'm just fooling around when I say
yeah.
that. But what I'm saying that I think that's a must today in the modern football that's going on. It's a must to have your cardiovascular system and your conditioning that you can play at the pace of what you're going to see today on offense and defenses. You've got to be able to be in great condition. Now, if your philosophy is to be big and so on, sure, you can be big, but you better be in shape, too.
I agree, Coach. All right, well, we're going a little long this segment. That's okay. We like talking to you, Coach. We like answering all the questions, and we had a bunch, and we have a bunch more to get to. We'll jump on all of those throughout the rest of the podcast. But thanks again, Coach, for coming on. We'll talk to you next week.
Well, thank you, Ryan. I'll see you tomorrow at Media Day, and I'll look forward to talking about that next week.
Yeah, for sure. We'll talk at Media Day tomorrow, and thanks again to Southern California Tickets. Everybody will be back in 30 seconds talking with Dan Weber. He's got a lot to say about the Ohio State situation, so stay tuned for that.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We have USCFootball.com. Beat writer Dan Weber joining us on the line. Lots to get to. Dan, how you doing? Everything going all right?
Doing great, yeah. Big start to the week. Pac-12, we'll probably say that about 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Pac-12 is their... get together for the new people that are running football officiating tonight, and then we've got Pac-12 Media Day tomorrow. So this is a big week. It's really going to finally seem like football.
For sure, for sure. We'll be out there tonight. We'll have reports on uscfootball.com. What's going on? We'll do interviews talking about the officiating. Anything you're expecting to see from the officiating there?
Well, I just like it that we're going to get a chance to meet Tony Correnti, the former La Mirada high school baseball coach, a Southern California guy, worked his way up to be Super Bowl NFL referee. Didn't work in the Pac-12, unfortunately. There wasn't any room for a guy who could referee the Super Bowl in the Pac-12, the old Pac-10 football officials. I think a perfect choice, it would seem to me, to be the new guy to run the Pac-12 football officials, and kind of an inspiration, I think, to a lot of young guys that they're bringing in to kind of revamp the football officials. So just looking forward to meeting them. I know they did this in the past. They would do it early morning, not really have enough time before media day, and unfortunately you'd ask them questions about, like, well, how does USC lead the USC's opponents lead the conference every year in fewest penalties, no matter who they are, and they give you an answer like, mathematically, that's really not probable. We really can't explain it, though, and you just want to bang your head against the wall. So it'll be interesting. It certainly looks like the Stanford game last year, if they had any questions about what they were going to do about football officiating, the Stanford game helped them decide it. They certainly weren't telling us, but you got to give them credit for, they made the call and they did it, and brought a lot of new officials in, and it's going to look, I think, completely different. And I think USC fans have to be pleased.
I think they will be. We'll see. So it'll be fun. We'll see what happens tonight, but definitely check out uscfootball.com. We have a lot of questions today, Dan, so let's try and get to some of these. We've got some voicemail questions. Again, if you want to leave us a voicemail, 206-888-6755. We have a few of them on the show today. A lot of questions about Ohio State. I'll start off with the voicemail question, then we can get into some of the other ones. And coming down this week that the Ohio State wasn't going to face a failure to monitor or lack of institutional control charges, anything like that. Here's the first question.
Ryan, JD from D.C., now that it appears clearly that Ohio State's going to get a wrist slap and not even be sanctioned with the failure to supervise, let alone lack of institutional control, it's pretty transparent, I think, even to unbiased people, that the sanctions against USC were all designed to be the moral equivalent of a death penalty. And it's pretty certain they're teeing up Kiffin for a show cause order, which will drive the lid in the coffin and effectively, cumulatively deliver the death penalty to this program. don't you think that Pat Hayden needs to get out in front of this process and lay down some markers that, you know, don't even think about lynching Kiffin because we will take you to court? I mean, you know, how much longer can the administration just sit there and let these people dismantle the football program simply out of pure spite and jealousy, nothing more and nothing less?
Well, you know, J.D. probably, you know, it represents the feelings of an awful lot of people. It does seem to be the USC case essentially seems like they decide the case, and then they, based on whatever it is they want to, you know, want to decide it with, and then they find the facts to, you know, fit the decision. It does look like decisions that were made before finding, you know, the information that they need. I mean, they kept the USC case open for 4 years. The Ohio State case, for example, they can't close it fast enough because if they keep it open, more and more things keep coming out. I mean, you know, almost everything that was in the Sports Illustrated article is not in this case. They said they couldn't find it. Sports Illustrated spent a week or two in Columbus and found all kinds of players that told them all kinds of things. None of that made it into the case. The NCAA, essentially, I think, the problem they've got with the Ohio State case is they can't score any points because they've been telling everybody for years that Ohio State had this perfect compliance department. Now it looks like, obviously, the Ohio State compliance department was basically a cover so that they could keep doing what they were doing. And the difference between Ohio State and USC, obviously, is what Ohio State was doing was with the cooperation of the coach, the cooperation of certainly looked like people in the compliance department were involved with getting those kids' cars. They weren't registering them. They were lying to the NCAA. You know, all kinds of things. If any area you looked at, it looks like much more severe violations by Ohio State. The fact that none of those earned either in a, I mean, that Lane Kiffin is facing a failure to, you know, monitor and promote, you know, compliant behavior at Tennessee for 16 phone calls and that were made during a week when they were allowed to make phone calls and a visit of a kid back to his own high school. Who did no recruiting, but they're calling it a recruiting trip. That's a serious, major violation that Lane has to answer for, but that Ohio State didn't have anything that reached that level. Obviously, the double standard is just almost mind-boggling. What USC's decided to do, it's, you know, all we know is what they've said from the very beginning, that they're not going to do anything. That they trust them, that they're quality people at the NCAA. They don't know why they do what they do, and they just want it over. It's kind of a, you know, if this were World War II, USC is France. And, you know, unfortunately,
fans aren't
going to want to
hear that, Dan.
I'm not sure anybody's going to come to the rescue. That seems to be the problem. You know, if you had to dream something, you'd say, well, maybe the Pac-12, if USC has a really good season, the Pac-12 will come to the rescue and say, we'd like to have USC in the championship game, please. You know, and maybe the Pac-12 schools would go together and say, you know, this isn't fair. I don't know. But, you know, J.D., you've hit something that we all just kind of bang our heads and say, how do you tell them in advance that you're going to do nothing in response, no matter what they do to you. It looked like they decided they wanted to get USC for all kinds of reasons. And if you looked at the Committee on Infractions that handled the USC case, those people had all kinds of reasons that they wanted to get USC, and a lot of them shouldn't have been on that committee, obviously, but they were. So. I wish I had a better answer.
I know.
I wish somebody had an answer. But unfortunately, there is no answer right now.
Yeah, and I feel bad because I know people kind of get sick of hearing about it. But, I mean, we had no less than four email questions and a couple voicemail questions on the subject just this week. Pat wrote in and said, OSU shows us that NCAA equals no consistency at all. I thought that was kind of funny. Michael is he's more worried about the Lane Kiffin situation, you know, with going on at Tennessee. Where they give you, you know, do you think USC is going to get more penalties with Coach Kiffin? He says the matter is becoming ludicrous, and I think everyone agrees with him. Sam had some of the similar concerns, and you know, want to know how they're going to handle the Kiffin case, and a couple of people also wrote in about he wanted to know about being proactive, doing some kind of lawsuit, media pressure, PR, and Casey wrote in with the same thing, saying that you know, it's time for USC to say enough is enough, and take the you know take. Control of this case and you know get out there on your own and maybe it's going through the Todd McNair lawsuit. Is that how USC has to show you know what was wrong with the NCAA there? There's a lot of issues going on. The Kiffin stuff, maybe you know USC getting out in front of it. Will they rely on Todd McNair's lawsuit against the NCAA? Like how's all you know all those kind of concerns were coming up?
Well, that's the question. Is there a big strategy? You know, we kind of developed, you know, an approach to the case, and I think over the year we made it clear, you know, we had all the documents, we read all the files, we looked at all the mistakes the NCAA made, we saw all the inconsistencies. This was before any of these other things happened. I mean, we knew all about that before we knew anything about, you know, Auburn and Cam Newton or Oregon or Ohio State or any of those cases, and now here they come, and the Tennessee case, and we realize, holy, it's worse than we ever thought by a factor of gosh only knows. I mean, the only good thing is all of this inconsistency and double standard make it so clear what happened to USC and the scale of unfairness and, you know, and dishonesty that the way the NCAA treated USC and the way they've changed their rules in order to protect the USC ruling by saying you can't compare any one ruling with any other ruling and that every infractions panel is its own little world and they can do anything they want. You can't say, well, two different schools got two different completely different penalties for doing the same thing. And they're saying, that's okay, you know. The infractions committee knows best, and whatever they do, whatever they want to do, they can do. It's basically it's a lawless situation where the NCAA says there are no more rules, there are no laws. Whoever is on that panel can do whatever they want to whoever they want, and there's nothing you can do about it. And obviously, they don't want to do anything to. Ohio State. They don't want to do anything to LSU for 3,500 phone calls that were illegal. But Tennessee, 16 phone calls that were made during a week when it was legal to contact players. But for some reason, Lane was supposedly told not to do that. And I find it interesting that in Lane's case, in the Tennessee case, we don't have evidently a written memo. We don't have anything in writing. We have someone recalling that he went down from the compliance department at Tennessee, and he remembers telling the coaches, Lane and Ed Orgeron, not to make those phone calls. But for some reason, we don't have in there why he told them they couldn't make them during a week when they were allowed to contact players. And it's interesting that the software, for example, we wrote about the software that USC has on their phones that will not allow a coach to make a call during a time period when it's illegal to make that call to a recruit. And the Tennessee also had that kind of software. And it didn't stop them from making the calls. Why? Because they weren't illegal during that time span, except for the fact that Tennessee's now saying, but we told them not to do that. We don't know why they told them. It's very fishy, really suspicious. The two charges that they say are major issues for Lane at Tennessee are so suspicious, so fishy, and so much of a lesser violation than anything that came up in the Ohio State case, for which they're not getting cited for anything major. It's just, you know, it's the kind of thing you would think USC has to respond to, but I'm not sure they will. We'll see. Maybe there's a, quote, understanding, the way there was an understanding that if USC acted really nice, didn't say anything bad, and guaranteed they wouldn't sue, they'd get their penalties reduced on appeal. How'd that work out?
Didn't work
well,
out.
Well, you know. So, you know, are there people saying, well, the last thing that they've done is they're making sure that they're going to protect Lane at all costs? We'll see. We'll see. Now, I know they have the ability to immediately appeal whatever comes down for Lane. It certainly looks like the NCAA has decided, okay, the easier way for us to go is to go after the coaches, and the easier way for schools to protect themselves is to totally blame the coaches and get the coaches to leave. If they really decide, you know, we've got a case like that. You know, obviously in Lane's case, there's nothing even anywhere near. I mean, if you looked at the Southeastern Conference for the 14 months that Lane was there at Tennessee, it's ridiculous to think that he was, you know, a scofflaw or somebody. You know, here the NCAA, for example, is considering, they haven't said they can't do it yet, allowing Texas to show up at any high school recruits game in the country and broadcast the game on the Texas network. But Lane's going to be in major trouble because a kid who was an intern on his staff went back to visit his old high school the same day Lane was there recruiting. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's nuts. It is through the looking glass. It's crazy. I think what we want to do now, though, is probably get away from trying to reason all of this out and trying to compare cases and all that, because obviously there is no rationale. There is no, USC was found guilty for being USC. That was a major violation. Lane Kiffin is being pursued because he's Lane Kiffin. That's it. It's that simple. And USC probably needs to do something to send a message to the NCAA that we're not going to take it anymore. We're not going to stand for being, you know, discriminated against for being USC, or our coach being discriminated against because he's our coach. That's it. I mean, it's that simple. Whatever has to happen. The only, you know, ray of sunshine might be if the NCAA, you know, continues on this path and does something to Lane completely out of line with any kind of understanding of fair play or the rules or whatever, it may push the situation to a place where not only Lane acts, but that USC acts in a way consistent with some of the things that are look like they're going to be happening in Congress. And that the case will be well known enough, and it will have all of the cases that have happened since that have gotten completely different treatment to show for it. For example, the thought that Matt Barkley, who was in the fifth and sixth grade when whatever happened at USC happened, will not be allowed to play in two straight bowl games, but that Cam Newton and Terrell Pryor, the NCAA couldn't get into gear fast enough to get those two in the bowl games last year. But they can't do anything about Matt Barkley. He can't play in a bowl game. Or the 30 kids that won't get scholarships to go to USC. That's beyond the pale. I mean, I could make the case that on that basis alone, that the depriving of 30 kids the chance to come to USC on a scholarship is worth it for USC to sue on behalf of those 30 kids. There's no way that's justified. There's no way that's fair. There's no way that's consistent with any rule that the NCAA ever had. And for that alone, not for USC, but for those 30 kids, USC should consider, where do we go and how do we do this? Because that's not fair. Those 30 kids, that's an opportunity they'll never, I mean, think about the life-changing opportunities that are going to be missed for those 30 kids. And ultimately, 30 kids will not get scholarships to Division I universities as a result of that. That's awful. There's no way. And those are innocent kids. So, anyway, maybe this will make it all come to a head. And maybe that'll be a good thing. I don't know. I think they've gone through so much last year, though. I think this year's team is going to be able to handle it. I wasn't sure, but the more you see them, the more you... The way they handle the Mark Tyler thing, for example, the last week, I think these guys are pretty resilient. And I think, you know, as tough as last year was, one of the things that it did to this team and probably this coaching staff is it has enabled them to handle these kinds of things going forward. Anyway, that's just trying to sum it up.
It's hard. It's a hard. There's
answer.
A lot to sum
Sorry
up
about
there.
That.
No, no problem. We got one last question I want to get to before we let you go. I know we were trying to get three guests on today, so we're doing a lot. But Troy SoCal had this. It was a pretty interesting email. He's gone back over the last two seasons and watched a lot of tape of Oregon and Oregon State, mostly LaMichael James and Jacquizz Rodgers in slow mo, every possible way to see them. He said they'll run up the middle, defenders get their hands on them and just slip off often. These guys aren't 235-pound running backs. He thinks that they're spraying their uniforms with silicone, making them slippery as heck. It's a clear liquid that dries fast, odorless, only takes a slight miss to be effective, can be bought at almost any hardware store. He's like, I'm willing to bet these guys are using just what I described. What do you think about that? And should USC running backs start doing that as well?
interesting.
I never heard about that before, but I thought
interesting.
You might
find... I mean, my feeling is that the thing that Oregon has done, certainly, it's a Kiz Rogers, I think, you know, as a 5'7", 185-pound guy, and LaMichael James a little taller, but also 185. You know, they're really, you know, they're kind of an interesting build. They're not stocky guys. They're kind of, you know, they're wiry but compact in a different sort of a way. And they are, I think, just mechanically, it's hard to grab them because their center of gravity is lower, but they're strong, you know, with a low center of gravity and really strong legs and very, very quick. I do think they're, you know, a lot of the times, you know, you've got guys that almost get there and get their hands on them and you know, don't quite, you know, make the tackle, and obviously the difference, for example, in the championship game against Auburn is they're playing on a brand new field that was slippery, and the Auburn kids couldn't get their footing. The Oregon kids couldn't get their footing, and the Auburn kids had, had a month to get ready for it. You've always heard, when I was a high school coach, I think we always heard that there were, you know, people were doing this or that to their uniforms, and people did every once in a while, you know, do something like that. Whether that's, a possibility, it's an interesting thought, let me just say that. And it's the kind of thing a kid could do on his own if he really wanted to. Let's think about that one for a while.
I know you like the uniform stuff.
The Oregon kids, I know this. They were wearing different. I mean, I know that, you know, obviously they're a Nike school. USC's a Nike school. But when you looked at the shoes that Oregon was wearing and you looked at the shoes USC was wearing, they weren't wearing anything that looked like similar shoes. And I thought, you know, Oregon came in last year to the Coliseum, and I thought they had an advantage in footwear. I don't know, you know, how that all plays out, but those are things to think about. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. Maybe we'll ask the people at the Pac-12 tonight if there's any sort of a test that they have the ability to, you know. I mean, I know you have seen it in games. I have, where officials have, check the jersey out, for example, like a baseball game where they check the baseball to see if there's some foreign substance on it or if it feels like there might be. And I have seen it on occasion where, you know, a guy has to put on another jersey. That's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question. I don't know. I thought Oregon, one of the advantages they had was they hold you so long before they call the play, And they kind of, I think, get the defense almost where they relax, and then they make the play call, and they do some. There's some movement involved, and there's some the way they handle the ball with the center and all that. That I do think officials are going to have to call them on a little bit more. And I think that I thought affected the defensive line's ability to play Oregon in the middle as much as anything, as the way they got into the play and when they actually snapped the ball. But it's worth thinking about.
All right, Dan. Well, we appreciate you coming on, and thanks for answering those questions. And I appreciate everyone out there sending in your questions. I know there was a lot of reaction to this Ohio State situation. So Dan Weber's the best guy to talk about it, and we're glad you could have you on, Dan. Thanks again.
Thank you, Ryan. Enjoyed it.
Okay. All right.
See ya.
And we'll be back in 30 seconds to go talk some recruiting with Gerard Martinez.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com networks.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We got Gerard Martinez on the line, uscfootball.com national recruiting analyst, overall recruiting guru. What's up, Gerard? How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Good, good. Just got a lot of stuff to get to on the podcast today, with the Ohio State stuff, Mark Tyler stuff, recruiting. Like, we've had so many questions. We appreciate everyone writing in and calling in. Podcast@uscfootball.com is our email address. We'll have to talk about some of this stuff maybe on the show this week, Gerard. So we'll on uscfootball.com TV later on in the week. So we'll do that on Thursday again. Maybe we'll, if we miss some stuff, we can get it there. But lots to get to.
Lots to get to. So let's get to it.
Sounds good. Okay, so first up, Ricky. Can any of the 10 of Troy recruits from the July 13th post graduate early, since there's another early enrollee spot available? Or could that early enrollee spot be where Gerald Bowman fits in? What do you think about getting some guys in early?
Well, first and foremost, yeah, Gerald Bowman is going to be a guy that is going to come in early. We just had an update on him last week. And definitely one of those players, being a JUCO that has kind of been through the rigmarole with different schools and transferring, he should be able to qualify and get out in December and be ready to go in January. And that's really, kind of what USC, I think, likes about him the most, is that, he can go towards another early enrollee spot. Other 10 in Troy, most of the prospects there are not early enrollees. At least they're not set up right now to be early enrollees. Ellis McCarthy, who is really at the top, being that three technique defensive tackle that, we kind of talked about that last week, the rankings and why everybody's ranked where they are ranked. He's kind of at that money position, if you will, if he's coming into that 4-3 with USC's defense. He's not set to be an early enrollee. I think the one guy out of that list that may have a possibility of sneaking in early would be Nelson Aguilar. He's not really scheduled right now. He hasn't talked about that in a while. The safety from Tampa, Florida, who was visited USC twice now, over the summer. Last year he visited, which was one of his first summer camps, and then this past summer he visited as well. And USC was the first school on him and has been recruiting pretty hard. And he's, Monty Kiffin, Lane Kiffin, got a lot of ties to Tampa area. They brought out Tyreek McCord as well, who's 6'3", 225-pound defensive end from Tampa, Jefferson High School. And, USC showing that they've got some pull still in Florida and bringing some guys in. But as far as early enrollees, a lot of the top-name guys that they have that are on the board that aren't committed are not scheduled to be early enrollees right now. And that's, one of those things that you kind of have to – you have some school lined up well, and you just have to be kind of prepared to do that. There's an occasional recruit that, you know, they come in and then it's September and they start, you know, looking at their credits and maybe they can take an extra class if that's viable at the school. You know, USC ran into some issues last year with Charles Burks, who was really set up okay to try to enroll early. He wasn't necessarily trying over the summer, but by, you know, fall camp, he got into the September, kind of October area of school, and USC was kind of, you know, talking to him about, hey, you know, we might have a spot for you, but you have to be an early enrollee. Well, at that point, it was obviously, you know, too late for him to take summer school classes, so he had to add on to his fall coursework, and Edison High School, the high school that he went to, would not allow him to graduate early, mainly because it's a policy, because if you have a lot of seniors that are graduating early, a semester early, you got a lot of empty seats in the classroom the last semester of their senior year that the school can't really fill. And so it becomes just a budget issue. It becomes just a policy bureaucratic issue with the high schools and the school districts. And so some schools actually frown upon kids graduating early. So, you know, that's something that can happen. You know, the more early spots that are open, meaning the more at this point when we talk about that, we're basically saying the more 2011 prospects, signees, incoming freshmen that are ineligible, because that's what's opening up more and more 2012 early enrollee spots, which is really kind of the same 2011 spots that weren't filled by the 2011 class. You know, the more spots that are open, the more shifting, the more you know, strategic kind of reevaluation of the class that's going to happen, you know, down the stretch. Last year, there was a lot of scrambling, you know, in December over just junior college prospects and, you know, trying to get to 30-plus guys and trying to sign as many as they could and just get bodies in this class knowing that they wanted to get as many signees as they could. That starts to happen a little more, you know, with this class if there's more and more spots that open up. Granted, we're going to kind of know, you know, after fall camp exactly how many spots there are. That's going to be a little more clear. But when you're trying to get early enrollees, And you're dealing with, you know, I think JUCO prospects a lot of the time because that's the guys that are trying to get out early. There's a little more, it seems, wiggle room with those guys as to whether they can get out and what they can't. That it becomes a little more of a mad dash and making sure that they can get the exact number of recruits that they want. Speaking of that, just to add in, we did talk to Kelvin York just the other night, and he is on track still to complete his coursework by the time he's scheduled now to graduate in December. Right now, for this next semester he's got coming up, it's all electives for him. So he's got his general ed, his English, his math completed. It's all a bunch of sociology classes and psychology classes that he's taking, which can be just as tough in college. But he's at least got done the majority of his general ed classes. So those are all behind him. So he's still on track right now to graduate early. So we'll see kind of how that develops. You know, he's a guy that USC is going to, you know, think a lot about, you know, just coming down the pike here. And if he can get in early, he's going to get in. It becomes a bigger question all of a sudden if he can't get in early. You know, that's going to be something that we have to see if USC still takes him. So a lot of that, you know, like I said, it's going to be December, going to be kind of, you know, down the wire a little bit. It's going to be interesting, this class. It could get very, very interesting towards the end here of the year.
Yeah, I think the next few years are going to be interesting because it's going to, you know, trying to squeeze in 15 guys and normal 25 spots. So we'll follow it and see if Lane Kiffin's up to the task. I think he will be, but we'll see what happens there. Steve had a question, Gerard. He said he's been wondering about the three incoming players that have not arrived at USC yet. These are guys from the class of 2011. We reported last week about Steve Dillon not making it in there. He also wanted to know about some of the other guys. You know, I think the guys we're talking about, J.R. Tavai, haven't seen him in yet. Greg Townsend Jr. And then also Javarius Allen. There were some different reports about him. We haven't seen him much. I know people are asking about him on the peristyle and tried to contact him and haven't been able to see him. You know, I talked to players on the team and they haven't seen him around in meetings or anything. So it looks like still a few guys that from the class of 2011 that aren't on campus yet.
Yeah, good luck with Javarius Allen. Now you know my plight as far as recruiting goes. Some guys just don't want to be getting a hold of But there's more than three guys that are not on campus right now. And as you mentioned, Tavai and Townsend, you know, Junior Pame is not currently on campus. He was enrolled in summer school and had to pull out because of really more of a miscommunication as far as his classwork and what he had already kind of completed. He had to basically go back to Moreno Valley and take another summer school class at Rancho Verde High School in order to be eligible. It was just for whatever reason a class that he didn't know he had to take. I don't know if it was just an error in USC looking at his transcripts, or it was an error from his high school counselors not knowing that he had to take another specific elective class. From what I understand, what I gather, we talked about this in the war room last week, it's not a class that he necessarily failed. It's just a class that he didn't know he had to take. So that tells me it's just an elective. And from the source I talked to, was pretty confident that he was going to be good to go. But nonetheless, still not on campus right now. Trey Madden's also not on campus right now. So that's an additional 2011 recruit that's still in summer school. He's retaking a math class. He's pretty confident that he's going to make it and that he'd be good to go. You never know. Sometimes you get the optimistic look from recruits, and that's the hard thing, about reporting when it comes to the whole academic issues in summer schools. Nobody wants to be labeled behind the curve when it comes to being eligible, and it's a touchy subject, and so it's hard to report on because you don't always get the real deal. You don't always get the 100% accurate, yeah, this is where I stand. So we kind of have to wait and see and see also, and I know I've mentioned this before, not just on the podcast, but the Peristyle, we really don't know who's in for 100% sure until fall camp, because there's kids for the last, I don't know what, 2-3 years, you would remember, Ryan, that have been incoming freshmen that have supposedly been cleared, and then all of a sudden they get yanked out of fall camp and they're sitting for a week in fall camp not being able to play because the NCAA clearinghouse is overlooking their transcripts again, or there's some kind of, they're not sure if this kid has been able to be able to play because maybe he doesn't have all the classes that they thought he had, or there's a test score that all of a sudden gets flagged all the way in August and he took this test, back in May. It's all weird. And so there's some things that can still happen. Demetrius Wright last year is a guy that comes to mind. There's been guys in the past where, things have happened where they've been on campus and actually participating in fall camp to some extent, and then they get pulled back. So we kind of have to wait until that point to really, really know who's in and who's out. But as far as the guys go, right now that are not have arrived on campus yet, Madden looks good. He's sounding good. Same thing with Townsend. Those guys are both confident. Pame, Jared Tavai, that was in the war room last week. I'm going to leave that for the war room. We did have some specific info on him. Sorry, but you know what? Subscribers got to get a little something out of the war room. But we have some info on him. No update on Javarius Allen. That's the guy that, like I was kind of, mentioning with Ryan saying that he was trying to get a hold of him. Not really a guy that we've talked to, I think, throughout the whole process. I've not talked to him personally throughout the whole process. He just doesn't really do much as far as interviews, and it's kind of hard, with Tallahassee Lincoln kids in general. T.J. Bryant, Javonza Starling, both those guys pretty much just refuse to talk to the media throughout the recruiting process. And, right now people are just guessing at what's going on with them. I have not heard anything from this side of the country as far as his eligibility. A lot of people assume that's an academic issue. I don't know that it's an academic issue. I really haven't heard one way or the other. It could be something else that's going on. It's all up to the imagination at this point, because we just have not heard from any good solid sources exactly what his deal is. And it's not necessarily one of the recruits that's in this 2011 class that I think people are necessarily worried about either, because he's coming in, maybe he's a big back, maybe he ends up playing a linebacker, he's coming off a knee injury. There's just a lot of question marks about him. With USC even offering him a scholarship, it kind of was, people were kind of wondering if that was a legitimate scholarship offer for. So he's just kind of out of sight, out of mind right now. And, I think guys like Tavai and Greg Townsend are a little more important as far as, you know, the future of the class, just because, you know, the D-line class already taken a hit with Steve Dillon going out. If, you know, a guy like J.R. Tavai or Townsend aren't able to qualify, then you're really, you know, the defensive line, you need a rotation for sure. You definitely need a new rotation. You got to have at least 8-9 guys on that defensive line that you can bring in a game that can get some reps. And so you're going to be digging a little deeper into your depth chart. And I think that, you know, with linemen already kind of being some question marks, at least on the offensive side of the ball, you know, USC fans don't want to hear about that on the defensive side of the ball. And they know that if you don't have it up front, then you just don't have it. And that's in the Pac-10, and that's in the SEC. It doesn't matter what conference you're in. And so I think with that said, those guys become a little more headline news as well.
All right. Jeff wants to know, it's a receiver question. He loves Robert Woods, and he thinks Farmer can be great too, but right now we have no pure vertical threat. He wants to know why USC isn't going after Durrell Green. Beckham Hardy, 6'6", 220 pounds, has the length and size to get any ball thrown his way, and his body would be a good blocker downfield for the running game. He knows there's limited scholarship offers and with two commits already, but both those guys seem to be willing to look elsewhere. He thinks Woods and Farmer plus Durrell Green Beckham would be insane, he called it. So what do you think about recruiting him, big receiver?
I think that sounds right on, and I think USC is in agreement with that. I don't know that they're not really going hard after him. I think it's just one of those issues, kind of going back to the Javarius Allen, the Buck Allen, you know, conversation and discussions. He's just not doing a lot of media. He's just not doing any interviews. It's kind of hard to really know what is going on with Durrell Green Beckham. I hear that USC still has a shot at an official visit, and then all bets are off. You know, you get a kid in on an official visit, and that's, you know, definitely going to be something that can sway, you know, a commitment. I think especially with Los Angeles and the coaching staff, just it seems like, you know, past two staffs, that's been really the greatest asset that USC has had in recruiting is just the coaches. You know, just getting recruits around the coaches and their energy and just how they conduct themselves, it always seems to be a positive for USC, among other things. Obviously, you know, just Los Angeles, you get a kid in January and it's, you know, 80 degrees out here, and that's something that a lot of these recruits really like too. So, you know, there's a lot that can go on if you get that official visit, and USC still in the running for that official visit. So I wouldn't say that they're not going at hard after him. It's just one of those things where he's going to wait probably to the very end. And, you know, a lot of people say that Oklahoma's the leader, Alabama's in there. You know, obviously the season is going to have an effect on what, you know, Green Beckham really thinks about these schools, what he thinks about the depth chart. But again, there's just not a lot coming out of his camp as far as his opinion on schools and what schools he's favoring. So it's a little bit of an assumption that, you know, USC's out of it. USC, it's all kind of secondhand information, a lot of kind of guessing, you know, where he's leaning. And I would say, again, that sounds great to me. I mean, Woods and Farmer and Green Beckham would be a heck of a lineup. I mean, but you know what? A heck of a lineup is also Woods, Farmer, and the Kyle Prater that we've seen in practice thus far. I mean, he's kind of a little bit forgotten just because, you know, he hasn't played and has been hurt. But if that guy is 100% healthy, I mean, that's just a weapon in and of itself. I mean, he's really, really good, and he has a lot of ability. And you know, Green Beckham is a phenomenal physical specimen, and I'm sure that, you know, he would be a guy that would play regardless of what school he's going to end up at. But if Kyle Prater can come in and play the way that we think he's capable of playing, the flashes that he's shown just in, you know, practice and workouts, then yeah, I don't know if anybody's going to be crying over not getting Green Beckham.
No, I agree with you there. He's going to be phenomenal, as long as he stays healthy, obviously, but he's just a great talent. Last one for you, Gerard, before we let you go. Kevin, he wants to know how Max Wittig and Cody Kessler would compare to the 2012 quarterback recruits. Where would they rank on those lists? There's some great quarterbacks in the recruiting class like Connor Brewer, Zach Klein, Bart Houston, Shane Dillon, Jake Rodriguez, Travis Wilson. Do you think USC would take a quarterback in this recruiting class since they offered Jake Rodriguez? Or do you think they're going to wait for a quarterback like Hayden Reddick or Troy Williams for the 2003 class? What do you think?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. And it's tough to answer just because you're going back and forth between classes and you know, the depth of talent is always different. I think they would be ranked fairly high, maybe even higher than they were last year. I think really with Riddick especially, I think would be ranked higher than a lot of guys. Connor Brewer has not been very impressive at all. He's a very small quarterback, doesn't really show a big arm. Sometimes that can be deceiving. I mean, he threw for a lot of yards last year on a really good team, but just in terms of, you know, physically, he doesn't match up very well with Cody Kessler or Max Whittick. Park Houston, kind of another guy, plays for a great high school team in De La Salle, a lot bigger, stronger prospect, a guy that just kind of commands a little more respect in terms of just his physical prowess. But I don't think he's the pure passer that Whittick or Kessler are, you know, at this point in high school. Shane Dillon, just haven't been very impressed with him. Again, not a guy that, you know, physically is going to blow you away, doesn't really have every throw. I would put Cody and Max both ahead of him. Jake Rodriguez was impressive. He was probably the most impressive quarterback that I saw in person this year, just at the Stanford Nike camp. He has some intangibles. He's a lot like Cody, really. I wouldn't say a lot like Cody, but I think more like Cody than Max Whittick. He kind of got that little bit of a, you know, Baby Sanchez nickname, you know, being a Latino quarterback. And I guess that's, you know, people make those comparisons just off face value. I don't think he's really that level guy, you know, like Mark Sanchez was coming out of high school. Mark Sanchez was really good coming out of high school. I think Jake Rodriguez had a lot of potential coming out of high school. He's also a guy that's run for, you know, over 1,000 yards, kind of has a little bit of some dual threat tendencies. He's a little more raw, kind of has to come into form a little more, but he showed, you know, some great leadership ability, great kid, smart. You know, those intangibles that you like to have in a quarterback, and on top of it, has some physical ability and can really chuck the ball. He would, in my opinion, line up closer to Whittick and Kessler, which is, you know, it's easy to say. I mean, USC just offered him, so you'd say, of course, you know. So, but I don't know if I would rank him above either of those guys either. Whittick, I think he might be a little closer to, because Whittick, you know, we have to remember, in high school, didn't really throw for a ton of yards. I mean, he was kind of a guy that was a part-time starter for a while, didn't really come into full-time view until, you know, really his junior year. And so, you know, he was a guy that kind of didn't have the results that some of these quarterbacks do that end up being, you know, four-year starters. So that was kind of a little more of a question mark with him. You know, he kind of had some games where he would struggle. You know, when Victor Blackwell went down senior year, you know, Whittick really struggled and didn't really have a lot of good playmakers to throw the ball to. So that also, you know, kind of hampered him and left some question marks with people. Where Cody Kessler had just two phenomenal years where I think he threw 36 touchdowns and had like two interceptions at some point his senior year. So, I mean, that was a guy that, you know, commanded just a lot of attention because of the stats he was putting up and just kind of the kid he was. Again, you know, he's one of those guys that's that outgoing leadership, has a lot of those intangibles. So those guys were thought of pretty highly. I think Rodriguez would probably be closer with Whittick. Now, in terms of recruiting a quarterback in this class, I think it's tough. I think Rodriguez was a little bit of a reach for USC, to be honest with you. I think they're chasing that one. There was a lot of things that could happen with Oregon. I think this is something that I kind of opined about a little bit on the Peristyle. I see the strategy involved with it, but I don't know if I necessarily think that's the best move for USC to do right now with everything as is. It's a good move if all of a sudden Matt Barkley leaves early for the NFL, if, you know, things kind of go wrong with Oregon because they are, you know, under investigation by the NCAA. Some things could happen, you know, from this point until the end of the year where all of a sudden Jake Rodriguez starts to have second thoughts about Oregon. So USC positions themselves well. They offer them early. They kind of allow themselves to kind of sit back. They couldn't take, I think, that commitment right now, even if, you know, Jake Rodriguez decided, you know what, I don't want to go to Oregon anymore. I want to go to USC. I don't know how they would really be able to work that. But like I said, that's the here and now. down the line, you know, and this is where, again, I know I've said this time and time again, and I sound like such a homer when I talk about it, but this is where Lane Kiffin is really an asset as a head coach, because I think, you know, they're looking at this thing 10 steps down the road here. You know, they're trying to make sure we don't get caught with our pants down with the quarterback position. All of a sudden, Barkley decides he's going to leave. He's a first-round pick at the end of the year. Maybe they have a transfer of the two guys who they'll probably try to redshirt this year with Wittig and Kessler. Or maybe Scroggins decides he's unhappy and he's, you know, he's slipping on the depth chart and he leaves. Or maybe they just don't feel like Scroggins is the guy that can step up and be that guy to take over for Matt Barkley if he leaves early. There's a lot of things that could happen. And also, by the way, you know, Jake Rodriguez's teammate, Jalen Kolfitz-Patrick, is committed to USC. So USC is going to know what's going on with his recruitment. I think they'll have a good feel for if all of a sudden he starts to waver from Oregon. So it's not, you know, in that way, looking down the line, it's not a bad offer. But for the here and now, I mean, it's a reach, and they're kind of chasing on it. If not, a lot of the things change. If you don't have all of a sudden some, you know, turmoil going on in Oregon and Rodriguez starts to second guess and all of a sudden Barkley decides to come back, then it's all for naught. But it is kind of something down the line that USC has to watch for. I think really, you know, next to him, I would think out of this class, Zach Klein would be – Zach Klein is probably the best quarterback in this class. He hasn't shown it really this offseason. I mean, yeah, he hasn't blown me away. I liked him at the Nike camp, but I think I liked Rodriguez a little more. Again, I've seen Zach Klein more, so you kind of look at him with a little more of a critical eye. But I think Klein – is probably still the best quarterback in the state right now. I would rank him higher than I would rank Wittig in high school, and he would probably be right there, if not a little bit above Kessler. I like Zach Klein a lot. I like what he brings to the table. I think he has all those tools to be a really good quarterback. There's maybe some limits there to his potential, but you could make that argument with Kessler as well. Wittig is probably the guy out of everybody that I've mentioned that has the most potential. I mean, he's got the big body. He's got the arm. He's really a guy that, like I said, it works against you in high school because you don't have all the results because you weren't, you know, a four-year starter in high school. But then it also works for you in college because his arm is still pretty new. I mean, he's not a guy that is throwing a million balls in high school. And, you know, they had a pretty good running game at Mater Dei. So, you know, he's still pretty fresh coming in, and now is really when he can peak. And that's, you know, we saw that with Matt Leiner in high school, you know, a guy that came in early, and he got a lot more run than Wittig did in high school. But, you know, Leiner was kind of filling in and doing a lot of part-time stuff with Matt Grudegut in high school. So he wasn't, you know, a full-time starter all 4 years. And so that really helped him. You know, he redshirted at USC, kind of nobody saw him coming, and all of a sudden, bada boom, bada bing, you know, he's one of the most successful college quarterbacks ever. And so Wittig, you know, there's a little bit of that kind of too, where he comes in and he hasn't thrown, you know, as many passes. You know, he's not as worn out, and, you know, maybe he's his best ball ahead of him. Going to 2013, I think, yes, I think that's kind of where USC starts to position themselves a little more. I think there's a better chance that if they really sign a quarterback, it's going to be out of that 2013 class. I think there's, you know, some talent that's already standing out. You know, it was this 2012 class. Outside of Klein, there was really a lot of question marks, and none of those guys have really stepped up and you know, oh, well, this guy's really, really good. I think, you know, judging from a lot of the reports that we got from the Elite 11, you know, it's a down year for quarterbacks. So I think 2013, with guys like Troy Williams and Hayden Reddick already kind of standing out, that tells us that the class is probably going to be a little better at the forefront. And then, you know, of course, we're all waiting for 2016 with David Stills. David Stills, so, you know, he's out there. And then you kind of wonder, okay, well, you know, how's USC kind of lining things up? You know, you want to probably maybe take one, you know, every year, depending, you know, on what I think happens with Wittig and Kessler, because you took two that year. So you always want to kind of have three on the roster. And it seems like, you know, with Lane Kiffin, they want four on the roster, but that may change with the 15 per class. You know, they may have to, you know, make some adjustments there in their thinking, and that the four that they have now, that happened. Basically, that pretty much happened before, you know, the sanctions and whatnot. It kind of had Wittig already committed. A lot of people wondered about that. You know, was Wittig going to keep him and Kessler now that, you know, they got these scholarship issues and all these things going on. Well, you know, I think the one thing that we can say confidently is that USC has to play with 75 first and then get a feel for and then the lower class limit to 15, and then that's going to maybe affect, you know, how they recruit as well. I mean, they went through it to some extent because they dipped low. You know, they got almost, it was like 60-something at some point in scholarships they had on the roster, you know, last year, and got above it this year with the 30 that they brought in, or, you know, the 30 that they're trying to bring in. But they got back to the closer to the 85 limit. But when they have to dip down to that 75, you know, for real, and that's the limit that they have, then, you know, then maybe there's some positions, you know, the coaches start to look at and go, all right, you know, I'm not sure. You know, maybe we don't need this many tight ends. Or maybe we don't really need this many quarterbacks. And you start to really know, you know, what's the necessity at that point. So we have yet to get there. But I think for quarterbacks, that's kind of how it's lining up right now. But I think they got a couple really good ones in Kessler and Wittig. And I think those guys bring something different to the table, but are both very talented players. And they'd be at the top of the class again this year, maybe even more so than last year.
All right, Gerard. Well, great stuff. We appreciate you coming on. And I think we'll talk to you probably on Thursday at the Ustream show. Or if not, we'll talk to you next week on the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right, man. Everyone, appreciate you tuning into the Peristyle podcast. We had a lot of questions and stuff this week. Tried to get to every single one of them. It went a little long, but that's okay. Hope you enjoy the show, and we'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.